A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is supported by the listener members of the Classical Network. Become a member today at wwfm.org. Thank you. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll look at some new initiatives that the classical music world is taking to expand representation, diversity, and inclusion in their artistic and staff ranks. The League of American Orchestras and Opera America recently announced two such grant programs, and I'll speak with League President and CEO Jesse Rosen, Mark Skorka, President and CEO of Opera America, and Cerise Jacobs, President of the Charles and Cerise Jacobs Charitable Foundation that is partnering with Opera America. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The Boston Symphony Orchestra and the Seattle Symphony each took home two Grammy Awards, and the Philadelphia-based vocal ensemble The Crossing garnered its second consecutive award at the 2019 Recording Academy Awards. Boston's recording of Shostakovich's Symphonies Numbers 4 and 11, directed by Andras Nelsons, won in the Best Orchestral Performance and Best Engineered Classical Album, and The Crossing, led by Donald Nally, received the award for Best Choral Performance for their recording of Lansing McCloskey's Zealot Canticles. The Seattle Symphony's recording of Aaron J. Kernis's Violin Concerto with soloist James Ennis and conducted by Ludovic Morlot won Grammys for Best Classical Instrumental Solo and Best Contemporary Classical Composition. A full list of the winners can be found at Grammys.com. Grants for Sculpture and the Princeton Symphony Orchestra are among the New Jersey organizations to win grants from the National Endowment for the Arts. The Princeton Symphony will receive $10,000 toward a free community event in May featuring Derek Bermel's new work, Mango Suite, based on the novel The House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros, about growing up in two different cultures. The program will include a talk by Cisneros and selections from the suite, and Bermel will visit local schools for songwriting workshops as part of the PSO's education program. Grounds for Sculpture will receive $45,000 for an exhibition of works by contemporary Indian artist Talur L.N. Other regional recipients include Philadelphia's Ballet X, the Black Pearl Chamber Orchestra, The Crossing, and the Curtis Institute of Music. More information and a full list of all national winners is available at arts.gov. Musicians of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra have voted to go on strike next month unless they are able to reach an agreement with management. The Chicago Tribune reported that the strike would begin March 10th, following nearly a year of unsuccessful negotiations. According to the Tribune, musicians didn't give specifics but said the disagreements were over salary, pension, and health benefits. Management told the paper that its offer did include improved wages. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. As the classical music world seeks to reflect the broader scope of American society, organizations have begun stepping up efforts to understand and promote diversity, inclusion, and accessibility in ways that go beyond the artists who appear on the stage. Two major initiatives were announced earlier this year to move the issue forward, and we'll take a look at each of them, beginning with the League of American Orchestras. Along with support from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, the League is launching its Catalyst Fund, which will support a three-year pilot program awarding grants of $10,000 to $25,000 to orchestras, both adult and youth, to enable them to develop strategies to address equity, diversity, and inclusion. Jesse Rosen is president and CEO of the League, and I spoke with him about how the Catalyst Fund will support a broad range of efforts to address diversity and inclusion.
A lot of the work in orchestras, and this goes back 40 years, has been on the talent development side. In other words, looking at how to strengthen and grow the talent pool and ensure that there are pathways for talent to develop and get into symphony orchestras. And a lot of that work took the form of fellowship programs for early career African American and Hispanic musicians. And there were several occurrences that led us toward the Catalyst Fund. One was a piece of research that we did on the fellowship programs. And the research was both quantitative and qualitative. The qualitative part involved hearing from the participants in those fellowships over those many years. And one of the big themes that emerged was that while invariably the participants in those fellowships improved musically, that it was a strong learning opportunity from the standpoint of learning repertoire in good orchestras. It took them through a lot of repertoire. That despite that, the experience was often quite uncomfortable, and many described it as ranging from indifference to outright hostile, which suggested that, you know, it's not enough simply to try to bring people who are different into your organization. You have to have organizations that, in fact, really want that to happen and that have strong alignment among all the people in the organization and strong understanding about what's the nature of this effort. Why are we working on this? Why do we care? And what are we going to do inside our organization to ensure that to the extent we have people who are different, that they feel welcome and supported, and that we have a capacity to really support them in our organization. So that came up from the research that we had done. And then while we were involved in developing this program we launched last year, the National Alliance for Audition Support, which, again, is a talent development program. It's really to remove some of the barriers early career musicians confront on the threshold of careers or actually moving up through the profession, taking a lot of auditions. And so while we were developing that program, we were obviously talking with lots of musicians. And without exception, every African-American and Hispanic musician we spoke to relayed stories of one form or another of bias and or discrimination occurring in their careers, which kind of reinforced some of what came up through the research that we had done. So it became clear that in order to envision orchestras being diverse and being successful in not only diversifying their musician workforce, but, you know, one hopes staff and board and audience, that to get to that place, there had to be work done inside the organizations themselves. It's as though, absent that, it's like, well, the problem's out there. You know, everything's fine here, but we just need to grow and strengthen the talent pool, and it's all going to be okay. Right. And our research and our experience in talking with the musicians suggested otherwise. It said, no, it's not going to be okay. The organizations themselves really are going to have to go through some change where they're really poised and ready and capable and have some capacity to really support people who are different.
As you went through this process, what are some of the initiatives and themes and issues that the Catalyst Fund will work towards and support?
You know, as an association, we tend to work in ways that are non-prescriptive, you know, so we don't tell our members, you know, you should do this, you should do that. What we tend to do is we say, look, you know, here's a set of issues that we think merit consideration, and to the extent you want to work on that, we want to support you. We think you should work on it, but here's some tools. And so the Catalyst Fund, in a general sense, is really intended to provide the resources and incentives for orchestras to do some of the internal cultural work that will give them greater competency and capacity for operating ways that are really, you know, authentically diverse. So the way this is structured is orchestras apply to the league, and through our grant from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, we're able to provide grants that will allow them to then retain a consultant to help them do some of that work. And so what is that work? Well, it could be any number of things. It could be the very, you know, early initial conversations about, you know, what do these words mean? You know, can we have some shared understanding about what these words and concepts mean and how do we relate to them individually? You know, kind of starting from, you know, a baseline of definitions and shared understanding to more active activity where you say, okay, so we have some understanding about this. Well, what are we going to do? What kind of a plan do we need to put in place in our organization so that we can work in ways that are truly diverse, whether that's around staff recruitment or board recruitment or, you know, working on audience development and any number of things. So the individual orchestra really defines, you know, how they want to approach this work. But it's essentially internally focused. In other words, it's about really building the capacity inside the organization so that when they do programmatic work, it arises out of some shared understanding that runs across the organization so that we avoid what we learned from the past, which is that, you know, it's not enough just to check a box and start a program if you don't have everyone within the organization on board with a shared point of view about where you're headed.
Well, as you said, you don't want to, you know, lay out some specifics, but is there one or two examples that you could point to that have come up at orchestras that you feel at least give a good model or blueprint or something to consider?
Sure, there's some things I could tell you, although I would just preface it by saying that this is early work, and we don't have, you know, a backlog or a catalog of practice in orchestras in this area. Having said that, a number of orchestras have begun to work on implicit bias. You know, this is a terribly important area of development in any organization. Of course, orchestras are making decisions about who plays in them, so it affects auditions, but also affects decisions around staff and how people act together within their own organizations. And so implicit bias training is something that has come up in a number of orchestras. Also, racial equity training is another thing, beginning to understand a way of looking at American experience through the lens of our history with slavery and how that has continued, you know, all the way up through to the current time. Understanding that framework and lens is really crucial for many orchestras, particularly ones that are in majority-minority cities, you know, with large populations of African American and Hispanic populations. So those are two areas that have come up. Another one is even just beginning to think about the demographics of your own organization. You know, who works here? You know, who, you know, what do we know about who's in our orchestra, who's on our staff, who's on our board, doing some demographic surveying. That in itself is a task some orchestras have undertaken, and then immediately by doing that, you bring up a lot of questions, and often there's a lot of surprises. People make a lot of judgments about where people come from and who they are based on, you know, superficial factors. So that's another tack people have taken.
And now you do have a close relationship with Sphinx. You have, you said, the National Audition Alliance program.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you envision as some of your partners in brainstorming and examining these issues and really, you know, getting to the heart of how these programs are working?
Well, the Catalyst program was developed, you know, was informed by the two things I mentioned previously, but there was another piece that informed that work, and that was we did an EDI strategic plan for the league to try to focus our own work. And it was through that process where we had hundreds of surveys and focus groups and interviews that were with our members that informed our thinking. So kind of right out of the box in terms of formulating what this thing would be, we relied very heavily on a pretty thorough scan of our membership. On an ongoing basis, we have a board committee, an EDI board committee, that's been kind of a constant partner with our staff in evaluating the work that we do. And while we haven't retained an evaluator yet for the Catalyst program, we will. And with that evaluator, we will develop a set of indicators and metrics so that we can look at the progress. And then we are in frequent conversation with our members and partners on a routine basis. You know, we meet twice a year with the CEOs of all of our member orchestras. We meet routinely with Sphinx and the New World Symphony and the National Alliance for Audition Support. And we regularly go to the Sphinx Conference every year. And so through our normal convenings, we'll be reporting out to our members what we're experiencing and also be inviting them to provide input and feedback to us. You know, we're just starting. You know, we just announced the program, so it's not even really up and running yet. We had our first webinar to introduce the program to our members and answer questions about the application process, and we had about 110 orchestras participate in that, which was really terrific. So, but we envision pretty robust engagement with our members and partners as this unfolds, particularly because it's new. And, you know, we really don't know what we will see when the applications come in, either in terms of the quantity or quality and depth of them. So it'll be a big learning experience. And we are regarding this pretty much as a pilot because it is so new, and I'm sure we'll have some mid-course adjustments along the way.
That was Jesse Rosen, President and CEO of the League of American Orchestras. More information can be found at americanorchestras.org. At Opera America, a partnership with the Charles and Cerise Jacobs Charitable Foundation will create the IDEA Opera Grant Program, with the goal of providing up to $12,500 to teams of composers and librettists of color, defined as African, Hispanic, Arab, Asian, and Native American, who are either citizens, permanent residents, or have DACA status. To learn more, I reached out to Mark Skorka, Opera America's president and CEO, and Cerise Jacobs, herself a creator and librettist who is president of the Charles and Cerise Jacobs Charitable Foundation. Skorka said the program is part of Opera America's efforts to continue to expand the breadth of opera.
The goal for many of our programs, including the IDEA Opera Grants, is to enrich the opera experience with the creative work of artists who may be new to the art form, to make sure that more people with more voices, different perspectives, come into the opera world to enrich the experience for all of us.
I think that most people working in the opera field will acknowledge that it's been really a Western, white, and male kind of art form, and America today is simply not that way anymore. And it would be wonderful to have our art form reflect the diversity that is American society. So that's how I look at it.
Well, the focus, the grants will be given to teams of composer librettists. How will the grant be used, and what are some of the activities that it will support?
The grant is a two-part grant, thanks to Cerise's generosity. First, there'll be two teams awarded each year, and each team will receive $12,500 in support to advance the developmental effort around what they wish to work on. That may be to do a workshop, to rehearse a certain scene. It may be that they want to try out different instruments, instrumentation, electronics, that the work can progress in a way that allows for exploration, experimentation, and flexibility. The second part of the grant, of equal value, will be to create a good recording of the work that results from the effort so that it can be available on the team's websites, and so we can show the work to our members at our New Works Forum and our annual conference. So there is a 50-50 combination, if you will, between support for developmental activity and support for documentation and promotion activity. In this way, work will progress, and the visibility and renown of these artists will also progress so they can have a real rich life in the opera world.
First of all, I do want to say to your audience that this IDEA grant and Opera America came up with the name, which I thought was just the most innovative name. IDEA is the acronym for Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access. And so what Mark described as this two-part program that the grant supports is essential for teams of color because they don't have enough money to develop work. And after they've developed work, they certainly don't have any exposure to mainstream audiences, which will permit, number one, general directors and the opera community to see a different kind of opera, because I have no doubt that these teams of color are going to produce different kinds of operatic works. And secondly, that the only way that I think we can get our eyes and ears attuned to something different is by exposure. So as long as they are underexposed, anything that people of color produce, unless it's really strictly in the Western canon, is going to be viewed as exotic or risky.
What is important here, too, in welcoming new voices into the opera world, we don't have an expectation that the people from different backgrounds, from different races or ethnicities, are going to simply or exclusively tell stories through the lens of their own race or ethnicity. We anticipate, and as Cerise says, we anticipate that some different stories, some different perspectives will be brought to the opera stage, and that's terrific. But we don't want to put pressure on these creators to only think about work that is reflective of their own identity. We want them to tell whatever stories they want to tell, and it might be a rather traditional love story, but they may tell it beautifully. Or it may be a traditional love story that they tell with a special musical or cultural perspective. We are working hard not to be prescriptive, but to open opportunity for these artists to tell the stories they want to tell.
You know, Mark, you bring up such an important point. I mean, this whole question of artists of color also revolves around the idea of pigeonholing. You know, for instance, I'm a Chinese person from Singapore. And so, you know, there's an expectation that you're going to write about Chinese things. And I have struggled a lot to break out of that pigeonholing. And I know a lot of other composers and librettists and directors and other artists of color who also have that struggle. So Mark nailed it perfectly when he said that the idea of the Idea Grant is to promote these artists to write whatever it is that moves them in whatever way they are moved by.
Well, one of the fine points, and it's something we just adjusted last week, we've been focused on teams of composers and librettists. Of course, the creation of opera almost always involves a team of a composer and a librettist. But we had overlooked the fact that in opera, it is the case from time to time where the same person creates both the music and the libretto. And you can look for reference to Richard Wagner and Carlisle Floyd, the Dean of American Opera Composers. So we also allow in this program that the team can be one person with two talents.
Do you see some opportunities to expand this program, either in terms of numbers or even supporting more types of initiatives by composers and librettists?
I know that Cerise would be delighted, as would we, if we could find additional support for expanding the program beyond two teams. It will be interesting to essentially prove the concept of the program in these next couple of years and to see how many composer librettist teams we have step forward. I'm hoping that the number is large and that it is large enough, in fact, to create a real case for additional support for this program. At the same time, we are looking to create a program for female librettists, female stage directors, for opera administrators of color. We also have an Alana Opera Network for administrators of color. So we are building this out across the organization, both to improve gender parity and equity across the field.
I want to echo what Mark just said, and also my feeling that obviously this is a proof of concept. And if it is successful, then I think that we can get other partnerships and funders to come in. But what is important to me is that it's not the number. In other words, we could, for instance, have four teams and maybe dispense with the promotion and the marketing aspect of it. But I think it's so important that once you've identified talent, that talent isn't just given resources enough to produce a work, but that work has to be promoted in order that people see the talent. Otherwise, it's literally like hiding your flame under a bushel. Is that the right thing? And you know what
you
I'm
know,
saying?
Cerise completes my thought. So that's why it works so well together. Opera America traditionally supported only opera companies in their production of new work because we didn't want to give money directly to composers who might sit alone in their studio, write an opera, but never have an opportunity to see it performed. Connecting the work to the producer is an essential step in this developmental process. If we aren't supporting the opera company through this program, we are at least giving the composer librettist teams a huge leg up by thinking of all the ways we can promote the visibility and the work of the artists who are successful in applying for grants. We have our New Works Forum every January, our annual conference every May or June, depending on the year. And introducing these artists to our producers at our largest convenings, showing the videos of their work, allowing them to speak about their work and their vision for the art form. We don't want to support artists merely to have them go off to the studio to create. We've got to connect them to the field for the program to be successful.
Hear, hear, Mark. This has been an important topic of discussion for us because I know, as a person of color myself, that there are many, many, many of my compatriots who have not been fortunate enough to have exposure, don't have the means to be able to promote themselves. And that's what really I feel very strongly about promoting others, because that's the only way we're going to expand the field. I hope that we get lots of publicity so that we will have a large number of teams to select from. And I think that is a mark of success to have a huge pool of applicants. And it's something that maybe as time goes on, we will continue to expand on.
And to that point, we have been working over the last number of months to build our communication mechanism, our contact list for this project, because we recognize that many of the traditional means by which we announce our programs may not reach people who are outside of our field. And this program will only be important if we are reaching more people, new people, people who haven't thought that opera is the place for them. So we really are going to make sure the announcement of this grant opportunity is known far and wide.
That was my conversation with Mark Skorka, President and CEO of Opera America, and Cerise Jacobs, a creator and librettist and president of the Charles and Cerise Jacobs Charitable Foundation. More information will be available later this spring at operaamerica.org/grants. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week on Autempo that focus on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. Remember, programs like this are made possible only with your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support of the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to Autempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of Autempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for Autempo on our program page. Autempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.